And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Jeff Y. from San Diego.
I'm Jeff, alcoholic. You guys said I could have a service animal. Had Terry last night at the meeting, kept saying, "So, are you nervous? Are you nervous? Are you nervous?" So I called him tonight, this afternoon, and I said, "Terry, I have laryngitis." Scared yet? Yeah. It's good to be here. Good to be sober. You know, every time I do this, I always get so nervous when I finally get up here. And my sponsor always said, you know, whenever that happens, always talk about it. It takes the power out of it. It doesn't work, but I continue to follow through. Never has. Hasn't worked to this day, but here I am, right? You know, I was taught that service doesn't really count unless it's inconvenient. So I do want you to know this is a Saturday night on a three-day weekend, and America's Most Wanted's on, and I could be down at the house in Mexico. Okay, so I get bonus points on this. Actually, the one that probably deserves the credit is my wife, Bev. We just celebrated an anniversary, and you know, we talk about inconvenient, and my wife has to do so much to help me get ready to do something like this, and I just, you know, it's one of those normie people that just kind of does those things just because it's the right thing to do. And that wasn't kind of the way that I've ever lived my life, you know. I always do things just to get some credit for it. And also want to thank everyone for all the extra stuff that you do to make this happen. Obviously, I don't jog up here. I have muscular dystrophy, and it takes a little bit extra assistance to get me up here. It takes a little extra assistance to make sure that there's not steps. And Alcoholics Anonymous and my friends have always done that to make it accessible for me, and I want to thank you all for allowing that. Before I get going, as far as the muscular dystrophy goes, I want you to know I do not suffer from muscular dystrophy. I am inconvenienced, I am frustrated, and often even a little bit angered at the muscular dystrophy, but I suffered from alcoholism. I truly suffered from alcoholism. Before, you know, I get going on this thing, I need to let you know is that I don't know when I crossed that line of alcoholism, because I was kind of taught around here that the alcohol is but a symptom of my disease. And I think I've always kind of felt like this. So, you know, the only place I know how to start is that first time that I felt different, you know? And that very first day of kindergarten, you know? I went to my first kindergarten class, and quite frankly, I really didn't want to go. And I had other things I could have been doing, quite frankly. And I got there, and they had there were little kids driving these trikes around. And they were pretty cool-looking trikes, and I thought, hey, I'd have kind of appreciated if one of them would come over and ask me to ride one of those. And none of them did. Kind of pissed me off. So I sat back and showed some of my social skills, and I sat back at the fence and got angry. And I thought, I don't really like them anyway. So then we went inside the classroom, and I thought, you know, I had all these toys, but they weren't really good toys, you know. I had better toys at home, quite frankly. And so they said, I remember watching some little boy building a castle, big deal, you know. And some people with crayons, la-ti-da, you know. And I thought, well, wrap, you know, this thing will end, and then I can head on home, and we'll be done with this. And then class was over, and the teacher said, we all had to clean up. And I'm thinking, I didn't play with anything. I ain't clean enough, you know. And then she said, even I was going to clean up. And so I thought, well, I'll have a reason. So I walked over and I kicked over that little boy's castle. I'll clean this up, all right. So anyway, my very first day of kindergarten, I was after school. That happened to be the first day we were moving that day also, and so evidently the school had given my parents the wrong time the school got out. So I got out to the crossing guard, and I had gotten out late, of course, because I was after school, and I was explaining to the crossing guard. He said, well, where are your folks? And I said, I don't know, we're moving. And he said, you know, you expect them soon. And I'm thinking, I might be yours, you know. Once my parents found out that I kicked over this boy's castle the first day of kindergarten, we may have a new beginning. So, you know, so this started for me way back when. I felt different, and, you know, and I just acted out from the very start. And just to fast forward, nothing changed, okay? Nothing changed through the rest of elementary school. I was always after school. We flipped to junior high, and I was always after school. And I got to high school, and, yeah, you get the routine. I'm after school again. And what happened to me is that one day I came across some things that made me feel better, you know? When I drank alcohol, I felt okay, you know? I found alcohol, and I didn't just dabble a little bit. I thought, this is it, you know? I am finally home. I jumped right into that, and, you know, everyone's got to find work out there, so... You know, I was supplementing my income by doing some herb sales, and it gets you through high school. And things were working. You know, things were working for me in high school. I thought, you know, a lot of these people are thinking about going to college. A lot of them were thinking about careers. And what I was thinking is, you know, what's going to happen is I'll get out of high school. I'll probably go into radio. I'll probably be like Johnny Carson. And then I've got to figure out what I'm going to do after I'm 25. And probably no surprise to you, but when I got out of high school, we took on some additional outside issues and things that would allow me to drink faster and longer, sometimes days at a time. And I just drank. And I love to drink. And so I had to postpone some of my radio stuff, you know, as I was catching up on some of my drinking time. I tried college a few days, a couple of different semesters every now and then. You got to get the folks, you know, optimistic and get a couple extra bucks. But anyway, that's where things were going for me. I loved alcohol. I don't think I've ever talked about this. Is I remember one time looking in the mirror and I thought, you know, because of the muscular dystrophy, I thought I was Elephant Man, you know? And I remember not really wanting anyone to know that. It was so shameful. And it wasn't until I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was my own little secret, thinking when they said, I heard my sponsor one time talk about loving himself, and he said something about hugging himself in the mirror. I know, it's a little foo-foo for me, too, but the, what are you going to do, slap him? So, I just go with some of that stuff. But it was years later that all of a sudden I remember looking in the mirror, and we were at a meeting, I think, and one of these little girls was sharing how she felt ugly. I thought, how in the world could she feel ugly and that? And I thought, you know, it's been a long time since I thought that, and I don't know when it went away. And I think it was one more of those things. I didn't work on it. It was one more of those things that I think has to do with God, and it has to do with time, and it has to do with, you know, taking these actions in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want you to know, I heard someone say one time that they were having a tough time with the spiritual part of this program. And the question I always have to ask is, what other part is there? Everything in Alcoholics Anonymous is spiritual. The actions are spiritual. The steps are spiritual. Prayer and meditation is spiritual. And the fellowship is spiritual. It is a spiritual program. You know, it says on page 45, if you're wondering what that book is about, it says it's about finding a power greater than ourselves that we can work with. That's exactly what this book is about. There isn't a lot of gray in there for me, you know. I just quoted the book. I remember when I was newer and my sponsor said, you know, I'd heard people using page numbers in the book all the time. And I can remember going up and I thought, I'm going to impress the sponsor tonight. And so I had quoted the big book and said the page and everything else. And he said, when I got back, I was like, you know, what do you think of me now? And he said, you know, Jeff, you know, a parrot can mock and quote, okay? What will impress me is your actions. So, on page 84... Page 84 says this, that our code is love and tolerance of others, which I also find very spiritual in its nature also. And I think sometimes I have a little bit of problem in Alcoholics Anonymous when I see people treating a new person or any person less than kind, because our code is love and tolerance of others, you know? But I have to be careful not to be intolerant. It's a catch-22 thing on this thing. Anyway, back to the drinking. You'll find I'm all over the place. Sorry. I did some things in the 70s, and every now and then, man, they kick in. I'm out of high school. We're doing some outside issues. We're drinking every night. I don't remember eating a lot of meals. You know, I remember happy hours. They had little snacks and stuff like that, and that seemed to keep me going for years. And every now and then you just swing by the folks, and they cook you dinner and fill you up for a couple of days, and I'm off drinking. And I ran across a buddy of mine that had similar hobbies. I moved in with him, and what we had was what we called window duty. I don't know if you guys were on that when you peek through the blinds, and because you can hear them out there, you know. And the nice thing about having him there was I could catch a little shut-eye from time to time and let him take over the windows. And I know you're kind of thinking that I'm getting close to a bottom, but we're nowhere near. This is at the top. No, we're at the top here. Things are going well for me. I continued on that pace. I was able to ruin several relationships. I was able to not be honest with just about everyone in my life. And then one day I fell in love with this girl, and it was kind of difficult because I couldn't tell her kind of what I had going on over here. So I got a different house over here and kind of kept this going on over here, and I had to keep her separate from some things. And I really don't know what happened to that relationship. Someone told me it might have been with honesty or communication, but I really don't know, because I bought her everything. I mean, what else is there? So anyway, so I was brokenhearted enough that I agreed to move in with my parents. Actually, what I told them was that I couldn't stop this drinking thing, and I thought maybe if I moved to the river, that they drank like I drank at the Colorado River, and maybe I could do dishes and I could drink. And my parents had divorced for quite a few years, and I'd never lived with my dad except for in the summers. He had said, why don't you come stay with us? And it actually worked out really nice. They had a pool, served the meals right at noon when he came home, so I could sleep till about 11:30, get up, eat lunch with them, and then I could head out and start drinking. And the only thing I didn't like is sometimes, I guess some of that behavior bothered my stepmom. And so sometimes she'd bang the vacuum a little bit hard on the door. It was a little bit irritating when you're trying to sleep. But, you know, they weren't charging anything, so I didn't really complain about it. One day I got offered a job in South Carolina. Yeah, I'm sure my dad had nothing to do with it. And I have no idea how much he had to pay to get me that far away. But out of the blue, this guy offers me a job to move to South Carolina. So off I am. And I thought it was going to actually be really beneficial, because I really thought that the problem was the people I was hanging out with. I really thought if I could just get away from them, I would be okay. And it was just a miracle. I kind of quit doing the outside issues, and I just, you know, I was able to go about a week, and then I started drinking. And it started to progress. South Carolina was not beneficial for me. They had all-night bars, and I just drank. I drank all the time. I woke up and I drank, and I can remember trying to set Saturdays aside to try and get laundry done. Just try to do laundry. And I was so unsuccessful at laundry when I got sober I had 134 shirts and 70 pairs of pants, because on Mondays, if I hadn't done laundry, I knew it wasn't going to have another shot until probably Saturday or Sunday. And so I just go to the store and I'd buy some more clothes. And I tried to buy some similar ones to the ones I had, because I didn't want you to think I was buying clothes all the time. So someone told me everyone else is trying to be different. You're drastically trying to be like others, you know. I was in South Carolina. I kept drinking, kept doing that same thing. I was still getting in trouble back there. I was just hanging on the best I could. And I got a call one day that my little sister was dying of cancer. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, maybe for once in your life you could do something for someone else. Maybe you could be there for her. And so I quit my job. I love quitting jobs, by the way. And so that, I thought, great, I can quit. And I look good, maybe. And so I quit my job and I moved back to California. And they had just changed the laws. This is about a little over, I guess, 23 and a half years ago. And they had changed the laws on drunk driving. And I was in town for about a week and I was already in jail. And then I was going to court. And guess who was there with me? It was my little sister. The one that was dying of cancer was in there at the courts one more time supporting me, you know, because she was worried about me. And I had years before I had gotten to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a guy that I used to drink with. And just before I had moved to South Carolina and done all that, he had swung by my house. And I had this little itty-bitty house, and I wasn't good with laundry, so I used a lot of the dirty clothes as carpeting. And and he swung by one Sunday morning at about 10:30 and knocked on my door, and I was still up. And he said, you know, Jeff, I'm on my way to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Would you like to come along? And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, I have a man-sized bottle of vodka, another man-sized bottle of Kahlua. I got enough outside issues to keep the entire town awake for weeks, right? Why would I go to Alcoholics Anonymous? Huh? What? Well, of course I'm not near the bottom. I've still got plenty. So now I'm back in the courts. You know, I'm worried about going to court. I've got, and so I called him up and I said, hey, I said, Joe, I said, I need to talk to you. I'm back in town and I got a DUI. And he said, well, why don't you come over and let's talk? And so I went over to see Joe, and he had not drank for 3 years. It was nuts. So I think we thought it was like the record for AA or something, but I went to see him. And I told him I got this DUI, and he started talking to me, and it got really uncomfortable. He was like airing all this dirty laundry about himself, you know, and it was like really honest, okay? I don't know where you guys come from. We didn't do a lot of honesty, you know. It wasn't, you know, do a few lines, hold hands, and do the Lord's Prayer where I come from, you know? And so I just got really uncomfortable with the whole thing, and finally I told him, I said, Joe, I don't want to quit drinking. I want you to go to court and tell them I've quit drinking is what I really want you to do. And he turned on me. And he said, you know what, Jeff, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. And those are my friends. And we don't need anyone like you in Alcoholics Anonymous. And quite frankly, I'd be embarrassed to take you. I'd rather go to court and lie for you than drag you into the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and on it, you know. And I thought, you know, you don't own Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't, you know, as if you have some control whether anyone's going to AA meetings or something like that. And so the next day we had planned we're going to drive to an AA meeting. I'm not really sure when that all turned on me. But I got home that night, and I started thinking about this whole thing, and I thought, man, I kind of rushed into this whole AA. Yeah. You know, it was kind of a slam dunk. I just went by to, you know, to talk to this guy. Everything's kind of changed. And so he called me the next day, and I said, he said, so what time am I picking you up? And I said, you know, I've been thinking about that. And he said, you have? And I said, yeah. And he said, and what have you figured out? And I said, well, what I figured out is that what I probably need more than an AA meeting is I really need a really good attorney. I said, I need an attorney. Okay, because what he said next was, oh, isn't that great? One of the guys we go to the meeting with is an attorney. We had dinner with him before. And you think, oh, and the hits keep coming, you know. So off I go in this little chicken crap truck of his, off to some meeting in Laguna Beach or some faraway place, so at least no one that I knew saw me. You know, I wouldn't want him to see me at an AA meeting. I didn't mind him seeing me throw up at the bar, but by God, don't you be taking me one of them AA meetings. And the reason I said that about a good attorney is because I go on a retreat with this guy, and I said, man, if I had said good attorney, you were out all this time, you know? But anyway, I had just said attorney. Anyway, I go to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and it was okay. I had my guard up a little bit, I must tell you. I was thinking, first of all, I ain't buying the cassette package. Whatever they're selling, I ain't doing it, you know? The second thing is I ain't going to ride a bicycle wearing a tie. And the third thing, I ain't getting some messed up hairdo hanging out at the airport. Those are some lines that we're not going to cross here, you know? Yeah. And here I am now. Yeah, look at this here, you know? Yeah, all I need is a messed up hairdo, except Ben said I got one. So anyway. So I'm at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything's going okay. We're going to get through it. Things are about to wrap up, and the next thing you know, I got large men holding my hands, and it was just awkward. I thought it should have been awkward for all of us, but here it was really me that had the awkwardness about this whole thing, and I thought, I don't think I can do this, you know. And then some of them were hugging, and if it works for you, that's great. I just was really having some issues, and I might have come into Alcoholics Anonymous with some anger issues. I just want you to know that. So anyway, I left, and I told him, I don't think I can do this, and he said, why is that? And I said, because I don't think I can do the God thing, and I can't do the holding hand things, and I'm not going to hug. Can't do it, man. I'm sorry. And he said, Jeff, you don't have to. He says, we have a requirement here, and that's a desire to stop drinking. And if you decide that's what you're going to do, then all you need to do is just make sure you call me. And Joe is still my sponsor today. I did not quit drinking right away. I didn't hear a lot of what you were talking about, Alcoholics Anonymous, but I did hear you say, if you could drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to you. And I thought, never tried that. You know? Never even thought about being a gentleman. Let's give that a run. So I tried that. I think we did the three beer a day thing, and it worked really well for about a week. And I guess I forgot to count. And the next thing you know, I was like I always am when I drink, and that's drunk, you know. I'm not speaking clearly, and I'm probably not that nice. And I was at a party, and I heard someone say, look at him, and he just got another DUI. I sponsor that guy today, so I did get some revenge. But you know what I did, though, is I went to the bar so I could drink alone, is what I really like to do anyway, you know. And I was sitting at that bar, and I thought to myself, here you are. You're drunk again, and you still got this sister that's dying of cancer. And what you should go is probably go by and see her. So I went to the liquor store, and I picked up some bottles because I thought we could probably have a party once I got over there. And I don't know where exactly I was for the next hour and 15 minutes, but I got to the house at about 3-something, and I knocked on the door, and when she opened it, she appeared angry. I had dropped one of the bottles, but I had several others, you know. And one had broken, and she had like that look in her eyes, and she said, "Jeff, just come in and go lay down, just go to sleep." And I said, "No, that's okay. I mean, if you guys are sleeping and stuff, that's okay. I'll just head on." She says, "No, you know, just sit down. You know, and I'll make you a drink. Why don't you hand me your keys and sit down?" And I said, "Okay." And so then she goes, "Jeff, you need to lay down." And I said, "No, just give me the keys." And she said, "Jeff, I'm not giving you the keys. You're not going to go hurt someone or yourself." And And what I did is I got really angry and I started threatening her. And then her boyfriend stood up and I thought, oh, don't even, you know. And I wouldn't hesitate to kill you, just sit down. You know, it was an absolute delight that evening. And so I woke someone up and had them come pick me up and got back to my house. And I thought, nobody tells me what to do. So I got some keys, took a cab back, and I got my car, you know, because once again, nobody tells me what to do. And I got home, and that next morning I woke up, and I hadn't intended to, but I heard one other thing evidently at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And what I heard him say is, when you've done the same things over and over again, you know, and expect a different results. And the other thing is when you have done these things and you've apologized so many times for the same thing and not changed your behavior, that the apology doesn't mean anything anymore. I woke up that day and I thought, my apologies are empty. And so what I did that day is I didn't drink. I didn't drink all day long. And it was a couple of days before my little sister called me and she said, are you still mad? And I said, I'm not mad. I said, I'm sorry, and I'm trying to show you this time. And I haven't drank in 3 days. And I have not had a drink since that day. Before you get all teary-eyed, I got a little addition to this story, though, is because I was still pretty cool. And I thought that, I can understand some of the not drinking stuff, but I thought, you know, if you do some social outside issues, social to me is I just don't buy them, I was still cool, and I was looking around the room, and there weren't a lot of cool people, and, well, I guess it speaks for itself. And so I kept doing that. I just kind of wandered in these rooms, and one day I got asked to read up at the podium, and as I was walking off the podium, the secretary of the meeting said, hey, Jeff, it gets better when you quit doing drugs. And I looked and I thought, what in the world? You know, as if I am. What's up with this guy, you know? You know? And then I got back to my seat, and my paranoia kicked in, and I was thinking, how did he know? I'll bet you they all know. I hate these people, you know? And then the thing kicks in is, how do they know? I mean, I'd like to learn that. That could be really helpful in drug smuggling. And so, you know, I kept coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I have not done anything to affect me from the neck up since that day, you know? I kept coming to these Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, not drinking, not doing any of those things. And it was months, and I went up to this gentleman. I had said to him, Bill, how'd you know? And he said, how did I know what? And I said, when I got off the podium, and you said, it gets better when you quit doing drugs. And he laughs, and he says, Jeff, I say that to everybody. Yeah, God's a funny guy. Said it exactly the way I would hear it and understand it, you know? I started this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried to do what I was told to do. I still struggled for a long time with the God thing. I struggled a lot with holding hands at the end of the meeting. My sponsor said if I needed to go stand in the bathroom and come out when it was done, and that's what I did. I just kept coming to these meetings, and I kept trying to do what my sponsor said. A couple of times, I remember calling him, and I said, hey, Joe, he said, how are you doing? And I said, not so good. And he said, are you going to a meeting? And I said, nope. And he said, are you going to read the book? And I said, nope. And he said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm calling you. The action you said I had to make. And he said, okay, I got a little project for you, okay? Well, it's pretty tough to tell him my schedule's full, so... So I said, okay. And so he said, okay, Jeff, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go do something nice for someone else and not let anyone else know. I said, okay, like what? He goes, that's the project. Click. Yeah, really helpful guy there. So I sat on my couch and I started thinking about it. I thought, he knows I don't have any money. You know, so what am I going to do? You know, these people in AA piss me off. You know, it's like they come up with this stuff that can't be done, so I look foolish and la, 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 you know? And so I got up and I walked down the street. I thought, I've about had it with this whole thing. You know, you guys think you're so smart. And I remember there was a little old lady lived up the street and her newspaper was laying in her driveway. And I thought, I got him. I got him.
So I picked up the newspaper, I looked around, I made sure no one saw me, ran it up, put it on the porch, and I went home and I called him. And I said, "Joe, I did it." And he said, "That's great, Jeff." And I said, "Do you want to know what I did?" And he said, "No." I said, "What do you mean, no?" And he said, "Jeff, the project is to do something nice for someone else and not let anyone know." And I said, "Yeah, but I could have told you that I did something. And if I don't tell you, then no one would know." And he said, "Yes, but then you wouldn't feel so good." Click. Which means the conversation's pretty much done at that point. So now when you talk to him, he says, "Jeff, let's make it clear, I've never hung up on you." And I said, "That's true. That's a little bit dramatic there. However, the conversation was over." And he said, "Yes, it was." So I did add the click, okay? It's an honest thing here, you know? I need to tell you that I struggled a little bit. I was telling about this stuff, struggling with God, and I remember going to him, and my little sister was dying of cancer, and it was horrible. And it's one of those things that you want to be there and you want to do something to help, and I couldn't do anything. And I remember I went to my sponsor and I said, "Joe, you know, I don't know what to do." I said, "I don't understand why God keeps doing this stuff to me." And he said, "Oh, interesting. It's all about you still, isn't it, Jeff? No, you're not that big a deal. Okay, and you need to get that through your head. This is about her. This isn't about you this time." And what I need you to know is that was one of the most freeing things that's happened to me in a long time. It seemed to take on a whole lot more than it's mine, you know. And this isn't all about me. The world does not revolve around me. You know, I'm just a small part of this thing, you know. And if I go out there and I continue to be kind and I try to take care of my side of the street, things seem to go real well for me. You know, coming tonight, I thought about the tie, and I know you guys are casual. My sponsor always said, you know, "Hey, Jeff, you know, out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, when you speak, I'd like you to wear a tie." And there's a little bit more that goes to that story is that when I first got sober, I got offered a job. Yeah, believe it or not. And so this job said that I had to wear a tie. And I told him I'm not going to take the job. And he said, "Why is that?" And I said, "Because I don't wear ties." Yeah. And he says, "You don't wear ties. And why is that?" I said, "Because I don't have to." "Oh, but this sounds like this job is one that you really would have liked." And I said, "Yeah, but I don't do that. And he said, "Oh." And he said, "Jeff, something else is going on. What's going on with this, man?" And I said, "I don't know how to tie a tie, you know." And he said, "Well, Jeff, I've got a little, why don't we go ahead and we'll get you one of them clip-on ties. We'll buy a little bit of time. How's that?" And I said, "Okay." And so they called me up, and his wife invited me over for dinner, said they needed help with something. You know, looking back as if they needed me for anything. But I got there, and there was a box, and it was wrapped up, and he said, "This is for you." And he had gone through his closet and gotten a bunch of ties out, and I opened up the box of ties, and he said, "Jeff, there's another part to this gift. I tied this myself tonight, by the way. I learned this about 23 years ago in the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned how to tie a tie. I learned how to trust someone and tell some people things that were kind of embarrassed. I thought at the age of 28 that I should probably already know how to do that, and I didn't know how to do that. And there's a whole lot of things in my life that is exactly like that I should have learned, but I was drinking. And what I learned here is that my sponsor says that once you start drinking is where it stunts your emotional, you know, growth. And I think for me, looking back at it, is I started really drinking when I was about 15. So by the time, you know, I was 28 years old, I'm emotionally about 15 years old, and I had to learn how to date. I had to learn how to do just about everything in my life, you know. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for a sponsor that I have that was so patient and so kind to me, you know, along this journey. And it's been an absolutely marvelous journey. I have I got offered a job in San Diego, 2.5 years sober, and I took the job, and here I am some 20 years later. And I really didn't think that I would be able to be a success. I just thought I'm pretty good at collecting unemployment, so when this job doesn't work out, I'll be closer to the beach, you know. And here I am all these years later, and things have gone well for me, you know. When I moved to San Diego and things had gone really well for me and had accumulated a couple houses and a couple of nice cars and some really neat stuff, you know. And it was really easy for me when I came to the podium and I got to share about, you know, about being spiritual and about how much, you know, I owed Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's not about the outside stuff with me. It's about the inside. And then all of a sudden I made some decisions that didn't go quite my way. And I thought I was going to lose all of them. And I was holding on such a tight grip on all of it. And I had myself where I didn't want to leave the house because I was working myself into a depression. And I, you know, was so scared of letting any of that stuff go. And one day I just realized it was like I had to go ahead and say, okay, I can't fight this anymore, you know. And I had to go ahead and I prayed. And it was like, God, you know, if you need to come get this stuff, come get it. I'm not fighting for it anymore, you know. And I'm sure God was tickled to death. It was, you know, Jeff gave us the go-ahead, you know. But, you know. But I do exactly what they taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I did is I made myself coffee maker of my own company to make coffee. And I just made that commitment. And I do what I'm supposed to do is that I do what I can today. The Serenity Prayer gives us two choices. It's one of them is ours and one of them is God's. And all I have to do is make that decision each day. And so if I can write the check, I do. If the money's not there, I don't mail it. But I did everything I could do one day at a time on this stuff. I told you about the radio stuff. And what I decided one day is that I was about 40 years old and my grandma had died, and I thought, you know, I think she had a lot of I wonder ifs and wish I hads. And I don't want to die like that, you know. And I think what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous for me is that if I will walk through my fears, I will live my dreams. And so what I did is I decided that all those years I'd always wanted to be on the radio. And so I quit my job. I love quitting jobs. I mentioned that, didn't I? And so I quit my job and decided that I was going to try and go in and do the radio stuff. And so I went to college at nights. And then I was at the oldies station in Palm Springs. And I did overnights on the weekends. I was told, you know, San Diego's a big market. You'll never get on the air here. You know, you're starting too old. And I said, you know, I didn't come here to be a star. I just came here to be on the radio once. That's all I came here to do. Man, I didn't come here to make any money. I came here because I wanted to try and do this. And that's why I'm here. If you want to help, that's great. Otherwise, I'll just show me the road. I'll find it. And, you know, I was able to work at the jazz station. I just left there about a year ago. And I was also on the K-pop, which was music for people that were older, and I was on there for about 3 years. And you know, I know I have to be careful because I'm not telling you that if you work these steps and you go to meetings and you get a sponsor that you get to be a radio personality. You know, I had someone call me one day and he said that that he had listened to me and he wanted me to know he'd been going to meetings and he decided he was going to be I forget what it was. And I said to him, I said, you know, you have to be real careful with this because we're also talking about these dreams have to be within our limitations. And I said, let me be real careful with you because, you know, all I ever wanted to do was be a baseball pitcher. Okay? Besides having the muscular dystrophy and being over 40 years old, you know, I really don't care how many meetings I go to, okay? I don't care how many steps I work. I'm guessing God and I aren't going to come up with a good enough knuckleball to swing this, you know? So I'm not telling you that. Please, you know, what I am telling you, though, is that I think what I'm talking about when we talk about walking through these fears is that I had a whole lot of fears about not being able to succeed. I had a fear of success. I had a fear of failure. I had a fear of everything, so I didn't do anything. I took absolutely no risks, and I did nothing to fulfill my life because I was afraid I would fail. You know, and because of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've been able to live this incredible life. I mentioned my wife. I have an incredible wife. I am so blessed. We just celebrated our anniversary, and my sponsor sent her an award.
Oh, yeah, he's a sweetheart. Yeah. Wanted to thank her for all of her patience and for taking the heat off of so many. The other day, my sponsor sent this to me because I was struggling with some things, and I thought I would share it with you. It's you're familiar, I'm guessing, with the promises, and I know, you know, there's a whole lot of promises in the book. I'm aware of that, but I'm talking about on page 83 the promises that it talks about when we're working on our ninth step, and I was having trouble letting go of some stuff, and I told him I don't. And I'm really struggling with this, and I know what I'm supposed to do, but I'm not willing, you know? And so he sent this to me, and he said, this is a twist on the promises. If I am careless about this phase of my development, I will be lost before I am halfway through. I will renew my obsession with alcohol and sacrifice all true happiness. I will forget the word serenity and have no peace. No matter how far down the scale I have already gone, I will fall even lower. I will resent the past and then repeat it over and over again. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will return, and more. I will focus on selfish things and hide from my fellows. Sanity will slip away. My whole attitude and outlook upon life will change for the worse. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will consume me. I will again be baffled by even the most normal of situations. I will suddenly believe that God will do nothing for me. Are these extravagant consequences? I think not. They have been fulfilled within me, always quickly, always completely. They will always materialize when I cease to work for them. Yeah, he's a sweetheart. Okay. Before I sit down once again, I want to thank each and every one of you, because I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous is an us, and I believe that we do this together. I don't do it alone. I had a disagreement with my friend Ben today, and it's not a disagreement that we used to have. But I told him what a blessing he is in my life, and he had told me that I was a blessing in his life, and I think we saw that a little bit differently. But I think we came to some common ground that we are all blessed to have each other in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we never have to be alone again. Last thing I have, I wrote a poem when I was new. I know you're going, oh great, a newcomer poem, this ought to really pick me up. And I swore to myself I would write one every year from then on. I haven't. It's the same one, and I just do it over and over and over again. And I think part of it's because it hasn't changed, though my life has changed so much. I came to you troubled and hurting deep inside, not giving you much to work with, and wanting a free ride. You took me in anyway, showing me the way, not living for tomorrow, but living just today. I am no saint. My fortunes aren't just yet, but thank you for some sanity. For that I am in debt. Thank you very much.